my smile was actually better after the accident than it was before the accident, even though I had braces, and like, it was basically perfect and no scarring. And it was miraculous. So it was at that point I was like, you know, this is something that I could do.
All right, we are live for another episode of Dental Marketing Theory. I have a very special guest today, and I'm super excited. I haven't been this excited for a podcast in a long time, but before we jump into this amazing content that I'm sure you're going to get a ton of value out of, I need you to do me a favor. We have thousands of views, and we only have about 50 we have thousands of viewers, I should say, every single week, and we only have about 50 reviews, so go leave a review. It really helps us out. And today, I have Dr. Mark Costas on the show, and we're going to be covering a lot of things, but I want to start right off the bat and talk about how you started in dentistry. I know you it took you 3 years and 21 attempts before you actually got into dental school. How did you actually stick with it that long?
Yeah. First of all, thank you, Gary. I really appreciate you being here. I was talking to you in the pre-chat. I'm so envious of your background game. Like a lot of us were working on our background game during Zoom because we had all these Zoom calls and we realized how lame ours was compared to other people. Now I feel envious and a little bit like I need to up my game significantly. So thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's an honor. As far as my journey, it all started like when I was 16 years old, started in my very first varsity baseball game. I was a starting left fielder and I was a catcher as well. I happened to be in left field. This kid cranks one out into my direction, and very long story short, I collided with the left field fence trying to play a home run off the left field fence. Ended up with a broken jaw, lost all of my front anterior teeth just after I got my braces off. So my parents were super thrilled. And prior to this point, dentistry was not on my radar at all. So I spent the next 18 months in and out of dental offices, dental specialty offices, plastic surgery offices, putting my smile back together. And at the tail end of it, even though it was really tedious, I had developed a really huge respect for the profession and what they were able to do. My smile was actually better after the accident than it was before the accident, even though I had braces, and like, it was basically perfect and no scarring, and it was miraculous. So it was at that point I was like, you know, this is something that I could do. This is something that I would be happy to spend the rest of my life doing. Respected them a lot. But I also had running through my veins this entrepreneurial DNA, I guess you could call it. Generations of people in my family had been entrepreneurs, and that was something that kind of really drove me as well. So when you merge the two together, I think of all the healthcare professions out there, and I think you'd probably agree with me, Gary, dentistry lends to a lot of entrepreneurship, and that could either be to our benefit as clinicians or to our detriment, because a lot of us like to focus on the clinical side of things. But yeah, I was a collegiate athlete. I played football in college. Then I ended up with a pretty bad back injury. I've had two back surgeries since then, broke my collarbone. So I decided to hang up the cleats after just a year, and had to figure out how I was going to pay for school after that. But then I could focus on, I went about focusing on, you know, the pre-medical coursework, the pre-dental coursework, studying for the DAT exam and stuff, but always kind of had a little bit of attention problems, learning problems.
Yeah,
so yeah, a little bit of a mild case of dyslexia, which all of my sons have. So once I learned how to work around that, and my teachers actually had to read the tests out loud. Wow. They didn't have accommodations like they do nowadays for where you get more time to take tests in a quiet environment. Like all of my sons have those accommodations and they thrive in school.
Wow.
We didn't have those. So I just had an average GPA, average test scores. Formal tests are really, really difficult for me still to this day.
Yeah, me too.
So yeah.
Hey, before we go any further in the show, I need you to visit a website for me, dentalmarketingmanager.com. If you're a dental office that has somebody managing some of your marketing internally, it's so important that you get them trained. And right now, there is no standard, there is no set of KPIs that people use to build out this position. And so it's been a little bit like the Wild Wild West, but we're aiming to change that. On December 8th and 9th of 2022, we are going to be hosting the first ever Dental Marketing Bootcamp, and we're going to be covering everything that there is to know about being a marketing manager, all the KPIs, how to partner with a marketing vendor, how to build out a position, how to get more patient referrals, 2023 plan calendared out, and everything that, again, that you're going to need to manage your dental marketing. And this is not something that you're going to want to miss if you are a marketing manager, and you're not going to want to have your team miss this if you have somebody helping you internally with your marketing. So we hope that you will come. A lot of the SMC clients are going to be there. And if you don't work with SMC, that's totally fine. We still want you there. We want to help you. We want to help your businesses grow. So go check us out, dentalmarketingmanager.com. And please go sign up. We have limited space, limited opportunities, and we hope to see you there. So you eventually get through school. That sounds super tough. And then you come out of college. How much, just out of curiosity, what year was it and how much debt were you in?
Sure. For undergrad or dental school?
Dental school.
I graduated dental school in 2002 and I had about $275,000 in debt. Even for back then, that was a ton.
Yeah, that's a ton. Now people are coming out with a half a million. I don't think college has gotten twice as good, but there's
a 100K a year. 100K a year is average without living expenses.
Yeah, that's crazy. Okay, so you came out, you have a boatload of debt. It's 2002, so it's before the economic crash in 2008. It's before the big bubble pop in 11. So what happened when you got out of college? Did you go work for someone else or did you start a practice?
Yeah, I worked as an associate for 1 year. A friend of mine, a good friend of mine, we were in the dental fraternity together, Delta Sig, and we created this friendship. And from the time I was a freshman, we kept in close touch. He was a senior, he was a D4, I was a D1. We kept in close touch. He basically offered me a job as a D1, and I stuck with that plan throughout. And so I kind of knew where I was going. He was very, very successful. He was actually legendary at our school. It's funny when you make friends with some of the upperclassmen, the underclassmen kind of follow their trajectory, and it's like, Reese has six practices, and he's doing XYZ, and he drives a Porsche, and like these people turn into like these local heroes. Yeah. I was really lucky to have worked for him for 12 months. He had a handful of Medicaid offices, which a lot of people turn their nose up at, but I learned how to be very, very efficient with my time, how to be fast, and how to do treatment plans on the fly. So I thought it was a great primer for my future kind of multiple practice ownership.
Got it. And then, so what year did you open your first practice?
2003. I hooked up with one of my friends from dental school. Another friend from dental school. He was one of my classmates.
So you only practiced for about a year before you jumped into ownership.
Yeah. I started looking around 10 months out. Okay. I had a very, very nice kind of portfolio of production history that the bank loved.
Yep.
I was a high producer. So they were offering to bankroll our first practice. Bought our first practice in 2003. He and I together, we built two more together. De novos. So three very successful practices.
Were they like GP offices, super GP offices?
Yeah. Back then there wasn't a ton of GPs placing implants, but we did everything else from wisdom teeth removal to crown and bridge to our own root canals and all that stuff. So our version of GPs from back then. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And then, so now you have multiple practices. When did you kind of switch from that, hey, I'm a single practice owner, or I have a practice or two, to, you know what, I actually want to scale and grow this and go from a clinician to more of a CEO. At what point did that click in your brain?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been super attracted to the entrepreneurial side, like I alluded to earlier. While I was trying to get into dental school during that 3-year period of time, I didn't get a traditional job. I enrolled in the executive MBA program. They accepted me to that, but I wasn't getting accepted to dental school. So executive MBA student, and then I bought my first business, which was a franchise. It was a catering truck franchise. So I ran a franchise for 3 years. Yeah, and then I ended up selling it when I finally got into dental school. But it was that 3 years was incredible because it was business development 101. It was MBA classes and it was business ownership. So I knew that I wanted to do something on a larger scale when I got out of dental school. Even going into dental school, I knew that it was going to be something. It was going to be some sort of scalable project. And yeah. To me, that the logical thing at the time was dental practice ownership. So
got
so
it. Yeah that's Fran. Those catering trucks. That I mean, that's probably one of the most unforgiving businesses. Your margins are super small. The product expires. You're really dependent on seasons and the flow of people and things like that. Compared to dentistry is probably one of the more forgiving industries. If you go out there, dental offices only fail about 10% of the time, while other businesses fail about 95% of the time. So that's a great practice going into what you were doing, and it's no question on why you were successful. So at what point did you're at 12 practices now? Is that right?
No, my group grew to 16 practices at one point, and I've been parting those practices off to smaller DSOs, et cetera, over the last probably 6 years. So I'm down to 4 practices right now. And we're stable right now at 4. They're turning into mega practices, each of them. But I'm happy with the size that we are right now. I've been with a lot of things in my life, I didn't have great timing, but building practices and shedding them at the time I decided to do so, in retrospect, in hindsight, looked like it was perfect timing compared to the multiples that are occurring right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what made you want to sell? What was the point where you said, you know, I'm done growing, right? Because to the entrepreneur, for me, growing is like, man, the funnest thing, right? And so it's just like, no, let's keep growing. And and the other thing that makes us an entrepreneur is like, I want to double down. I want to triple down. I want to quadruple down. So it's very difficult to say, okay, I'm done. Now I'm going to sell these. I'm going to keep these going, because it almost feels like you're going backwards, but I get it. You probably had other visions and things that you wanted to do, which we'll talk about in a moment. But what made you turn that corner from, okay, 16, now I'm going to go and scale backwards?
Yeah, that's an awesome question that I don't often get asked. It's important to kind of take a view of my entire trajectory. After probably about 6 practices, I burnt out badly because I didn't structure things correctly the way that people like you would probably suggest that I would have structured things. I wasn't super systemized. I didn't have a competent executive team on board at the time. I was the bottleneck in the entire business, meaning that the org chart all came back to me. So the org chart looked like a pom-pom instead of a chart, basically. So I burnt out pretty badly, sold 4 of the 6 practices pretty early in the journey. And that was included in the 16. So I sold 4 of those. So I did grow to about a dozen at a time, but I had already sold 4 before we scaled the second time.
Okay. So what'd you do different the second time? Like walk through what you mean when you say, hey, we built an executive team and we had systems. What did that look like? And walk me through that process.
Yeah. So, the first 6 practices were dumb luck. They were all successful, but, and I of course thought I was a genius because they were all very profitable. I was actually working about 50 hours a week because I was touching each of the practices. I was actually working in each of the practices every week. I would do a half day here, then drive across town, do another, drive down to Phoenix, do a full day there. So I was burning the candle at both ends for sure, but they were all successful. And I didn't realize at the time that they were a product of the team that came with the practices that I was acquiring. Just happened to stumble across a handful of really, really good office managers, a handful of great associates, high producing associates. So all the practices were very successful. When I started to realize that there was many chinks in my armor was when the key players started leaving. you know, for whatever reason, and not because they were unhappy with me or anything, but this is what happens in a large organization.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you have 60 people working for you, a key player is going to leave from time to time. You know, a spouse gets a job transfer. Yeah. Somebody decides that they want to go to hygiene school or dental school. So I started losing some of my key players. And then I started seeing that I didn't have like this general way of managing my business. I was relying so heavily on the team. And when they started leaving, so did the knowledge and so did the efficiencies. Mm. So I realized that if I was going to be in this game, I was going to have to try to figure this out. So I sold four of them, did quite well on those four, and it gave me the opportunity to use the remaining two practices as my lab. And I started to experiment with systemization. I started surrounding myself with, you know, business consultants, marketing consultants, and just learning more about how to scale, you know, this service-based business. And I got better at marketing. I got better at systemization. And then I realized that my Achilles heel was the fact that everything was passing through me. Yeah. So as a CEO of the practice, I was doing everything. Like I was the marketing manager. I was the CIO. I was the COO. I was the dude fixing the chairs. I was negotiating with the supply reps in the labs. There just wasn't enough time in the day, particularly at this stage of my career when I was still a clinician, a full-time clinician at the time. Hmm. So I went about trying to reorganize everything. And when I started looking for a different level of person, when I started focusing on onboarding and really, 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 really training up the people according to the vision of the practices and the ideals and the philosophies that I wanted to instill in each of these practices and the organization as a whole, things started to change significantly. And it was through that kind of journey that I realized that, okay, I'm starting to figure this out. I'm going to start scaling again. And that's when we just kind of really started acquiring aggressively. And with that, I learned a lot. That even after that point, things weren't super smooth all the time. But that's when I started to gain a little bit of street cred and a little bit of confidence. Mm-hmm. And people started approaching me to coach them. That's on a awesome. One-on-one basis. And then that's when things started to change and my focus started to kind of go away from practice ownership towards the coaching and consulting business.
That's awesome. And I definitely want to jump into that. And one thing that's really impressive to me is that I went through a similar journey. We 5X'd our business right after COVID. So we didn't lay anybody off.
Wow.
And we, it went from like 19 team members to about 80 team members and went from about 300,000 in MRR to over 1.2 million in MRR. We made the Inc. 5,000 list. It was the most painful experience ever. I broke every single system in our company. It was everything that the entrepreneur wants, right? It was everything I asked for, everything that I dreamed of, but I had no idea that we were not even 5% ready for that kind of growth. Now we made the list a second time, and this time it wasn't so painful. Still bumps in the road, like you said, but that second go round, I think that's where you kind of learn some things along the way. And I see a lot of people who give up on the first time. Don't give up on the first time. Keep going. And there's always more opportunities that are going to present themselves as long as you can keep learning, keep growing. So that's an amazing story. I can definitely relate to it. And I know a lot of other people can as well. So one of the things that you said now, you said, I asked you, okay, what's some of the main KPIs that you looked at every day? And EBITDA is a big one and overhead, of course. But then you said leadership score, systemization score, and culture score. Could you break those three down for me?
Yeah, sure. So within our organization, we've developed a belt system, right? So you can be a white belt. Everybody kind of understands what belts look like and what a black belt is. Whether or not you've ever put a gi on or put boxing gloves on, you kind of understand the belt system in martial arts. Everybody kind of understands that. So we came up with this, what we call, a belt classification. So you can come in as a white belt. And then the whole model is that you're trying to get to black belt level. You come in as a white belt, a blue belt, a brown belt, or a black belt. Okay. And those classifications are based on several different KPIs. And you mentioned them. The first one is overhead and EBITDA. So what is your profitability? A lot of people, I mean, off the bat, if you ask what their profitability is, they'll give you their production number, or their collections number. I say, that's your revenue. That's good. Now subtract all of your expenses and tell me what your overhead is. And you know, a lot of people just haven't done just that, that very, very basic math. What is your EBITDA? What's your overhead? So that's the first classification. Then we go into leadership score. How effective are you as a leader? So we have a series of different self-assessments. When people come into our organization, they're asked to do a battery of assessments, and we ask some pretty detailed questions. They come up with a leadership score, and then there's also a cultural assessment that's all based on their core values that they've put together. How effective is each of your team members in relation to these core values? So if your core value is open and honest communication, continual growth, whatever, you could look at each individual person during their monthly performance reviews and say, how well, how much do you embody this particular core value? A 0 out of 5. And if they're an awesome communicator, they're the glue that holds the whole team together, they would get a 5. If they're the gossip and they're the pot stirrer, they would get a 1 or a 0. And then you add up all of those per person, then you take an average of that for the entire office. That's what we would call your cultural score. And systemization score is the same. We have 6 pillars to systemization in a dental practice. How well do you embody each of these 6 pillars? And that is like a 14-page document that they fill out. They give themselves a score. When you look at all of those, all of the assessment scores need to have an 80% or greater to be a black belt. And they have to have an overhead, excluding doctor's salary, that's below 50%. You do all of that, you get a black belt status. And then anything less than that is according to the categories below that. Interestingly enough, Gary, when we started this out, we only had one metric, and that was get your overhead to 60%.
Yeah.
And that there was so few sophisticated business owners that were in our organization at the time. That's what we spent 100% of our time doing. Mm-hmm. Get your overhead to 60% and the rest of it will figure itself out.
That can cause some major drama though, right? Because you end up doing some pretty crazy things to get to your number.
Right, right. And then it's like, what do we focus on? Are we focusing on increasing production? Are we focusing variable expenses, fixed expenses? What are we doing here? So we've gotten quite a bit more sophisticated over the years as far as how we work with practices. We've been doing this for almost 11 years now. So our process is pretty fine-tuned at this point.
That's amazing. One of the first things that we look at in every one of our leadership meetings is our pulse score. And our pulse score is how people are feeling within the business on a weekly basis and their one-on-one check-ins on a score to 1 to 5. And then ENPS score has been huge for us. It's really allowed people to give us blind feedback so that way they don't feel like there's repercussion or anything like that. And
what's that stand for?
ENPS score is employee net promoter score. So net promoter score. A lot of dentists use net promoter score. So that how it works is it's on a scale of 1 to 10. And if you're an 8, 9, or 10, that means the the patient would refer to you. They would tell their friends and family. So the question is, would you refer your friends or family to us as a dental office? If they're an 8, 9, or 10, that means, yeah, they're already out there. They're promoting you. If they're, I think it's 6, 7, 8, then they're neutral. They're not telling anybody, but they're also not bad mouthing you. If they're below that, then they're out trashing you, right? They're saying, they're like, don't go there. It's not a great place. And so you usually want to get that score let me move it over to employees. We do the same thing, but for employees. And then we just put a box there and tell us what we're doing good. Tell us what we need to improve. And it's blind. So you don't know what team member's sending it in and who's saying it. And so it allows for the really honest feedback. And when we were really growing, we had a score of about 40. Right now, our score is, I think our last one was 82, 84, somewhere right in there.
Awesome.
How it scores is negative 100 to positive 100. An amazing score, like the best cultures of like really big corporations are like in the 50s. Like that's, if you get into the 40s, 30s, you're doing really good. So that's, we lead with culture. I think that my mindset is this: profitability, we can always get more profit. Revenue, we can always get more revenue. But if I can get my team aligned and feeling good and all on the same page, we can accomplish anything. There's nothing right. That's going to stop us. And if we're not aligned and we're not on the same page, it's absolutely chaos and it's really hard to get anything done, even little things. So we lead with everything. So I love everything that you just broke down there. Now, how did you, So when did DSI come into the picture? How did DSI get started? You kind of gave us a glimpse. You said people started reaching out, but when did you say, this is where I want to focus my energy?
Yeah, 2011. I was having a very difficult time. Let me take it back. 2009, I was having a very difficult time recruiting assistants in my little town. So I have a cluster of towns here called the Tri-Cities. This is my hometown. We have one practice in each of the Tri-Cities.
What state?
It was expanded. Arizona.
Arizona. Okay, got it.
Yep. And then it expanded because a portion of our population started to move east. So it turned into the Quad Cities. So we had a practice in each of the Quad Cities, and we kept on expanding beyond our environment here in Arizona. And then we busted out to California as well. But I was having a very difficult time recruiting good dental assistants, clinical dental assistants. So I came up with this idea to have a dental assisting school in my office. It doesn't sound that revolutionary now, but back then it was. So in 2009, I created a dental assisting school curriculum, and we put it before the State Board of Post-Secondary Education in Arizona, and it was passed. And then we had classes in our own local area, and it was very, very popular. And then we could cherry pick our people, and then the rest of the people that we didn't select, we would send their resumes out to all the other local dentists. So we had a placing service as well, and it did really well. And people started kind of catching wind of it, and I started a company around it. And we're Horizon Schools of Dental Assisting. We ended up with over 200 locations all across the United States until we sold out basically every major location. And then basically the doors were shuttered because I didn't set it up correctly. I didn't set up an ARR model or anything like that. It was like, you buy the curriculum one and done, you own that territory for life. So as a more sophisticated entrepreneur now,
lesson I would have learned set it on up, that one.
Yeah, I would have set it up way, way differently. But what happened was, as I was building that organization, people are asking me to speak on stages at all of the major dental conferences. They're like, wow, this is a very unique business model. You can, you know, create a business in your office when the doors are shut. So your actual location, your real estate, even if you're leasing, is generating income while you are not there. Right. So it was a moment in time when it was a very, very popular thing. Let's do a dental assisting school in our office. So that got me on a lot of different stages. But when I was telling the story about kind of why this was a good business opportunity, I would share my story. I would share my story about 3 years to get into dental school. I would share my story about, you know, basically having an emotional and physical breakdown after six practices, how I sold four, reset, started rebuilding. And then what happened was the event organizers were like, I want you back in three months, but I don't want you to talk about dental assisting. I want you to talk about your business systemization and all that stuff. And I just started talking about it. I had no idea that it was going to turn into a business. As I was talking about it and getting paid to speak on stages, people would pull me aside after I'd get off stage, and they're like, hey, can you come to my office and help me put those systems in place? And back in the day, I was like, okay, I don't know what to charge for that. I don't even know what this is called, but I guess I could be like your coach or a consultant. I guess this is what consultants do. So it started very rudimentarily, and I would go around to practices, and I would spend 2 days there, and they would pay me X number of dollars. I was getting paid way more money to stay home and do dental work. But this was speaking to me. I loved working with dentists. I loved speaking on stages.
It allows you when you become really good at what you do, and you can share it with others and see their fast growth. It's very rewarding. It's very, very rewarding.
Exactly. And then I realized that, you know, obviously, again, I ran into the situation where I was the bottleneck in the business. I could only be in so many different states in a month. And believe me, I pushed the envelope. It was like two trips a week for 3 years. And then I realized that if I had my own events, I wouldn't have to speak at other people's events as much. So I could decrease that. And if I started a group kind of collaborative structure instead of only a one-on-one in person, then I could scale this thing. So that's when it started. And then, you know, about 5 years ago, Dental Success Network was born. Now we're at 1,200 paying members in Dental Success Network. So, the reason.
And then how does that work? Like, is that like a monthly thing that they pay for? Or is it like a mastermind? It's a mastermind, right? Like, how does that, like, if I was a dentist and I said, hey, tell me about this. I want to grow my dental practice. How would that look and feel joining DSI?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's two different, it's a little confusing because there's tons of initials, right? So Dental Success Network is our large network of 1200 dentists. And that was post DSI. DSI is our group coaching company that is a mastermind group. There's 200 people that reside inside that mastermind group. We meet three times a year and they get coaching calls every single month from a team coach that coaches the teams, from a black belt coach that is a graduate of our program that knows how to increase efficiencies and decrease overhead, et cetera. And then also from a financial analytics standpoint too, we have a whole division of financial analysis and we create financial reports for all of our clients, et cetera. So that's DSI. DSN is our larger network, which is 1200 doctors. It's a much lower threshold of entry. Everybody has to pay on a monthly basis, but it's a three-legged stool. We have the largest buying group in dentistry, period. We work with the largest vendors in dentistry because of those 1,200 members, we have a collective revenue of over $1.4 billion. So when vendors come to us and we say, we have 1,200 members, we have huge buying power, we want the very best deal that you could give us on heavy equipment or this SaaS product or these disposables, they don't ignore us because we are a huge footprint.
Yeah,
so that's one leg of the stool. Largest buying group in the profession. The second leg of the stool is a very, very vibrant community. So you think of, you know, some of these free Facebook groups where people get on there and sometimes they're awesome and supportive and sometimes they're super snarky and they yell at you because your taper isn't 3 degrees. It's actually 4.5 degrees. And somehow they can tell that they are superior dentists of you than you. And then it turns into this mudslinging, ridiculous
toxic,
crap storm.
Toxic, yeah.
It's very, very toxic. So we wanted to get away from that. So we have a curated community. One strike and you're out, only positivity, only support. And it is everything from Crown and Bridge to Endo to All on X to IV sedation to practice management. We have about 20 rooms in there and 20 faculty that man the rooms, only positivity and support and collaboration. That's the second leg of the stool. The third leg of the stool is hundreds of hours of continuing education videos and tests and quizzes and live events inside our learning portal as well. So that's DSN.
That's awesome. Okay. So tons of value there. Obviously, again, you are a serial entrepreneurial, right? You probably couldn't stop if you wanted to. So those are all amazing things, extremely useful. And I learned a lot just in your structure there. That really helped clear it up. Now, another thing you have coming up is Scaling from Clinician to CEO Summit. It's October 5th through the 7th in Denver. I'm speaking at it and I'm also a sponsor there as well. So thank you so much for both of those opportunities. I'm super excited because we get to dive in and be super technical. So I'm the way that you're like a dental business nerd, like where you just can geek out about it for hours. That's how I feel about marketing. And we have more aggregated dental marketing data across the nation than anybody else in the world. So, and we use it to our advantage to help our clients. So I'm super excited to share that with the audience, but share a little bit about your vision for that conference that you're having. Why should someone come to it?
Yeah. So, I do several live events every year, right? So we have our Dental Success Summit. That's every June. And we get between 700 and 1,000 people there, people that are looking for general practice management, knowledge, systemization, all the stuff that we teach. People come to listen to myself and our speakers talk about that stuff. That is anywhere from somebody that is a D4 or D3 or D4 all the way up to somebody that owns, say, 20 dental practices. And we get everybody from there and in between. So it's a grander audience. We're speaking about very general topics. If you've ever been to a DSO conference, you know that a lot of them are amazingly huge and amazing for networking. And all the magic happens in the hallways and around the vendor booths. And there's some big deals that are happening in the hallways and at the bars and at steak dinners after the conference is over. What I think that some of these things and most of these DSO conferences are lacking is really hardcore tactical. Like, here is how you go from 3 offices to 25 offices from a lending perspective, from a systemization perspective, from legal and accounting, and are we doing a call center? Like, not surface level, like, hello, billion-dollar DSO CEO, like, what's your morning routine? And just overall, like, how deep can you go in a half hour when you have a panel of other $4 billion CEO owners? It's really interesting to see them all in one place. And
there's a lot of value there, but it's a different approach.
Right. So we're going super tactical. Like, here you go. Here is not necessarily a panel, but one speaker speaking an inch wide and a mile deep. That's what we're going for. And so I partnered up with Polaris, with Perrin Desports and his awesome team, DeWalker Sinha as well. They are just the smartest dudes that I know when it comes to scaling DSO. Like, so smart that, like, we'll sit in a room for 6 hours and we will fill like 5 whiteboards, take pictures of them, erase them, fill them up again, erase them, fill them up again.
I've been in these meetings with them.
Oh my God, they're just so smart. Yeah. So I love their organization.
The other thing is they're able to explain it in a way that I can understand it. I've never bought or sold a dental practice. I don't know what a lot of these terms mean. And I've done different webinars with them. And I'm at the end, I'm like, oh, I get it now. So if I can get it, everybody else can get it.
Yep. So a lot of people would think that we would be competing companies, but we're actually very synergistic. Like, everybody needs to know how to run a dental practice from soup to nuts, right? Like, from hiring and firing, HR to overhead control to patient experience, all that stuff is what we specialize in DSI. Once you have been able to build 2 or 3 or 5 dental offices using our systems, and you want to continue to go from 5 to 200, that's where Perrin and his company takes over and figures out, how am I going to fund this thing? What are the valuation metrics that I'm going to be looking at? The very, very sophisticated stuff that happens after, say, 4 to 5 practices on up. And that's what we're going to be focusing on that weekend.
Awesome. And we're going to drop the links below for that. If you guys want to come to that, it's a limited space event. So it's not going to be a 700 person event. It's for a very particular group of people. I know if you're private equity backed, this isn't going to be the event for you. If you say, hey, I just want to have 1 practice or 2 practices and I don't want to do anymore, this definitely isn't the event for you. But if you are in between those two and you're looking to grow your practices, then this is definitely the event for you, and really trying to get out of that clinician mindset into the CEO mindset, which is hard to do. There are two different skill sets. They're two different sides of your brain. They're just two totally separate things. You can become good at both of them, but it takes time and practice and energy, and you could do it a lot faster. This is what I've learned. I'm a technician on the marketing side. I had to learn how to become a CEO, and I was able to move a lot faster by working with consultants, coaches, a lot of books, and that helped me improve what I did on a regular basis. So I love the value that you guys bring there.
Oh, thanks, Gary. You know, it's funny, as a clinician, as a physician of the oral cavity, which is what we are, we're very pragmatic, we're very scientific, we're very left brain with what we do. And we're very, as a group, I'm not speaking for myself, but as a group, very, very intelligent, top 3% of all educated people in the world, if you have your doctorate degree. So very, very intelligent people. We can't take for granted that just because we understand biochemistry, histology, and how to do an all on X advanced surgery, that we're just going to be able to figure out the business stuff. Just like anything else, you have to give it, you know, you have to give it the respect and say, all right, I'm not going to be able to figure this out just because I'm an intelligent person. Just like you can't figure out histology on your own because you're intelligent. You need somebody to walk you down the path that's already been there and show you, you know, the strategies and the techniques in order to be successful.
Well, the way I think of it, just because someone's a CEO doesn't mean that they can be a hygienist.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? Like, it's just like, or even a dental assistant. Or even answer the front desk phones properly, right? Like, somebody's a CEO and you just say, hey, here's the front desk. Here, you schedule people, use the PMS. They're not going to be able to do it. Like, there's a learning curve. And so whatever you do, there's always a learning curve. It's just identifying that, hey, I'm learning something new and I'm going to grow and improve at it. And when you do that, when you're smart and you have that skill set like you described, and you apply yourself, then really sky's the limit. You can do whatever you want. But when you try to do it in a way that you, like you said, where you don't give it the credit it deserves, or you're kind of pretend like you're not transitioning into a different job, that's where bad things happen. And that's where kind of
bad things can happen.
Yeah. That's where it gets rough. It's really hard. And the only reason I know that is because I tried doing that. I tried scaling and growing and not putting any time into being a CEO and just being a good marketer. It didn't work because it was a totally different skill set that I was trying to learn. You have a podcast as well. What's your podcast? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we started the podcast in 2015. We are the fifth ever dental podcast. There's well over 100 dental podcasts now. It's called the Dentalpreneur Podcast. We're a 5-day a week podcast. We're in about 150, broadcast in about 150 countries. We just eclipsed 1,550 episodes and 7.2 million downloads.
Over That's so awesome. 6 years. I think your episode like 58, like, so for us, so we're like way, way behind you. So if I go like another 5 years, I'll catch up with you.
Oh, you'll but definitely catch up.
I have a feeling that you're going to keep going though. So I probably will just keep riding in your wake. So I really appreciate you coming on today. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that we should have talked about today?
No, I love what you're doing for the profession. I love how you support dentists. I think that a lot of times people try to go it alone with certain areas of their business. I've always had a coach in everything. I've had a coach. I always have a personal trainer. I have a performance coach right now. I have a diet coach. You know, I'm always looking to, get the knowledge of people that have been there and do this for a living. I think it's really important that people surround themselves with people like you and not try to save a buck here and there and try to do it by themselves and end up costing themselves money, not just in time, but also in opportunity. If you're focusing on things that you're not a specialist in, you're going to lose a lot of opportunity and time that's more valuable focusing on something that you are expert in. So yes, I believe that surround yourself with people that are smarter than you in different areas. There's no shame to it, including Gary and his professionals. And don't try to go it alone. And that is my number one thing. Surround yourself with smarter people.
Yep. You'll get where you want to go a lot faster. And same goes to you. You guys are doing a great job. I'm super excited to see you and meet you in person next month. And thanks so much for coming on today.
Thanks, Gary.